So welcome again to the last presentation. My name is Kurt Kluis. I work for Microsoft as a technology solution professional for Microsoft EMEA, but I'm focused in Belgium and the Netherlands. And I'm doing this work for Azure. So Azure is my focus, helping customers in the adoption of Azure, helping them with proof of concepts, helping them to define business models, and so on. So in this presentation, we're going to talk about Azure, of course. This is the first slide. I think you have seen this before, maybe in other presentations, where we talk that if you want to have an on-premises environment, then you have some investment that you have to do before that you can deploy your application. You have to build your servers, you have to pay for your operating system, the licenses, and so on. So you cannot predict the actual load, and you all will always be over-provisioning, and in some situations you have under-capacity because your hardware, your data center cannot handle the load that you're currently having. And then on the other hand, when the load goes down, you have too much capacities and you're paying too much for that. So that's the classical model, and in the cloud model we are doing this differently. So we have also a load, but we can align the hardware capacity or the service capacity of the data storage capacity, we can align this very closely to the load. Instead of buying a new piece of hardware, we will just add another instance in our service model to run another instance of our service. And it can also scale down. We have elasticity. If we see that our load goes down, then we can also decrease the amount of instances that we have or just remove some databases, and it will save us money. And we can align our costs and income very good to each other. That's the basic idea of what we have in the cloud. We'll not discuss this more in detail because I think you have seen this slide before. I want to discuss other topics. Difference between IaaS, platform as a service, software as a service, where software as a service is the end user product. An end user will use it. It's all managed by the vendor. In terms of Microsoft, you will see this with Office 365 or currently with BPOS. It's an end-user product that is sold in a cloud model. You pay as you grow. You pay on a monthly fee. But Azure is really what a platform as a service is. Platform as a service, you are still managing the applications and the data. You are responsible for building the application to create a schema to store your data, and the interaction between the application and the data. This is your business. This is your responsibility. So platform as a service, you manage applications and data, and that's what Azure is built for. And it's not software as a service. It's also not infrastructure as a service. So please don't consider Azure as an infrastructure. It is a platform. You develop on top of that platform applications and data. Okay. So my message here is to you as an ISV, applications and data, this is your business. You will want to manage the applications and the data yourself and not the underlying infrastructure. You want to outsource that to a cloud vendor, to Azure. Well, in this situation, you will see that your customer will look at you and they will expect that you are a software as a service provider. So you are building a package. You have an application and a data store that has value for your customer. And the customer also wants to go to the cloud, but again, he doesn't want to invest in local hardware. He don't want to invest in building the application themselves. And they want to use your application, but also in a software as a service model. They also want to pay on a monthly basis. They only also want to pay for what they use, for what they store in the data store, and do not want to work with licenses. So this is a shift that you are making. Your platform is going to a cloud environment, but also your customers are making the shift. Instead of paying you a license for the package, they're also going to pay you just a monthly fee for what they consume based in your applications. So let's go deeper into software as a service. What does it really mean? Software as a service means, well, we're going to run applications in an internet-accessible data center without upfront investment. It's going to be delivered via a web browser, via the web. But still, the customer will own his own data. You're the provider of the application, but the data is still owned by the customer. So he wants to have control over the data. He wants to make the decision where to store the data, and so on. Typically, we see in a software as a service model, there is a try the application for no charge before purchasing model. And so instead of having a big deployment at the customer side before he can start, you want to have a situation where the customer can just try your application. He goes to websites and he creates an account into that web application, and he just wants to try that web application for a few weeks and then decide whether to go for a full model, for a full purchasing model. So charges per month are also typical for software as a service. And for you as a package developer, it has also an advantage, and you have a very faster deployment and upgrade cycle. If you want to change something, if you want to fix a bug, if you want to deploy a new feature, well, you just deploy it to your web environment on Azure, and immediately all your customers can use that new feature. You don't have to go to the customer and install everything. And so because your application is based on an internet server, you can do that. And at the end, it will require less IT expertise from the customer itself. And he only needs to install a browser, and then he can use your application. And depending on where he decides to put the data, he can put it also in Azure. You can provide the account for him. He can provide the account for himself. Or he can even use his own SQL Server locally for your data storage. Yes? Well, one thing that we can suggest to solve that, and you're telling a certain problem, is that you can encrypt your data and that the encryption key is owned by the customer. So you can create a situation where you are developing a package, the data is stored in SQL Azure, but it is encrypted, and only your customer has the encryption key. So you do not own the encryption key. So you can never look at the data, nor can Microsoft look into the data. It can see the data, but it cannot see the exact meaning of the data. It's encrypted. So the encryption key can be owned by the customer. That's a situation that we can build. So owning the data means, well, I don't want to give my data to anybody else. This means owning the data. And this can be done by encryption. Not on a database level, but in your application level, you can do that. Yeah? You can say, well, I'm going to create a data access layer which does the encrypting for me, and it stores the encrypted values into the data store. But I'm using this in an application level with the certificate, with the key, the encryption key, that is known only by the end user, by the customer. Yes. Yes. And that's something you do at the application level. It's not by the platform. It's at the application level. You decide how to use the key.
The data is first coming to the application level. There it is encrypted. So the data is available in the platform, in the Azure platform.
Well, there's a difference between data at rest, means data in your storage somewhere, and data in motion means data is somewhere in a network traversing from one server to another server. That can also be encrypted. You can use, for instance, HTTPS for having encryption between the browser and your application.
Yes, but when it comes to the server, it is readable. Sorry.
Your code in the application should read the data.
So you need the key for encrypting it.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. But that key can be owned by the customer. You don't have access to that key.
You see?
You have it temporarily while your application is running. I understand. Yes. Okay, it can be a difficult discussion, but we can work on that. We can work something out together. So basic idea about Azure is we have compute power on one hand, hosting applications, worker role, web roles, and SQL Azure on the other hand, where we have the relational database, and App Fabric that allows us to have a service bus and some access control between multiple parts of your cloud operating systems, and so on. But I think you have seen this slide before also. Another thing that I want to mention is, if we're talking about making revenue of your applications, is There is also something like Windows Azure Marketplace, and it's like a marketplace like you have also on phones. You can build an application or you can just provide data to other customers through that marketplace. So if you have valuable data that you think, well, somebody else might be interested in renting that data or buying the data from me, you can do that through the marketplace. And also for applications. So we have two types, one for data market and one for applications. If you have a nice application that can be used by a lot of users, also outside of Belgium, you can post them on the marketplace, and if somebody is interested in that application, he can sell and he can buy that application from the marketplace.
Is that the application as in code, or is it the application as in the service? Is this the service you sell here, or is it the application code?
No, it's the service. Eh? It's not the binaries, it's not your IP, it's just the usage of an application, the service that you provide by having an application in the cloud. Yeah? It's just a way to have more customers. So it's a catalog of applications. If you're interested, you can buy them, but you can also sell them on. It's not about selling the code, it's just renting the service to somebody else. Yeah? So then there is a very simple business model here. If you post some data on the data market, and the way to do that is just to open up a SQL Azure database with all your data stored into that. And the Microsoft data market environment will expose that SQL server to customers. Of course, customers that have to pay for your data. And the revenue here is you decide on your pricing. You want to sell some data. You decide yourself on the pricing model, X numbers of euros per month or X numbers of euros per year. And there is just a simple split. You get 80% and Microsoft takes 20% of that revenue. So whatever you sell, you're making money off that. And the only thing that you have to do is create your data and put it in a SQL Azure database, and Microsoft will expose that to the marketplace, will take care of the web services, and because you're getting to that data with web services, so the end user that wants to use the data will just use web services, and it can download it as an OData feed into an Excel application. And for every consumption, there is a bookkeeping in the system that knows that that customer has downloaded such many data, and then he has to pay for it to Microsoft, and you get 80% of that. So you don't do the billing directly to the end customer. The end customer is paying Microsoft for that data, and Microsoft gives you 80% of that revenue. That's the basic idea. You don't invest in anything. You just create a SQL Azure database, put your data on it, and then you start selling it. Yes, in the US there are a lot of real-time examples to do that. And there are some very large statistical organizations that keep track of, like for instance, the crime rate for a certain city in the US. And every month they update that, so many murders, so many car thefts, and so on. So that kind of data is there. Yeah.
NASA is also
there. Yes, NASA has some feed that shows some data from the universe. Yeah. Weather applications. So if you have some data that is about the weather, tomorrow it is that weather and so on, it will rain and it will not rain and so on. If you have that data, that type of data, which is interesting for many other consumers, you can sell it through that marketplace. Yeah. So you can do that for data only. You can do that for applications or a combination of that. So there is always the same revenue split, 80-20%, 20% for Microsoft, 80% for you. Okay, so now let's talk more about Azure again, about the pricing models. We have this introductory special, so if you just want to start with Azure and you do not want to pay a huge amount of money for that, there is a free special, a free introductory special. You have 1,750 hours of compute power, so you can run your application for a complete month. But we're working on an extra small instance. So in this free version, you're developing your application on a shared environment. Extra small instance means you have a virtual machine, but it is not dedicated one-to-one to a processor. So if you go into production, after you have done your tests in that introductory special, you can simply change it to another version of the instance, which is a small, a medium, a large, or an extra large. And this means you have a dedicated processor, or maybe 2, 4, or 8 dedicated processors. Okay. You also have enough SQL Azure database to test 1 gigabyte. You have some access control transaction service bus connections, and you also have some data transfer.
Maybe just mention, you're actually sharing a CPU. You're not sharing your VM.
No, that's true. There's no issue about security. You're running your application inside the virtual machine, which is only your virtual machine. But that virtual machine has not a dedicated processor. If you're talking about the extra small instance, and this is one you get for free. As soon as you start paying, you get a dedicated processor inside your dedicated virtual machine. So the next step could be that you're starting with MSDN subscription. I don't know how many, I think you all have an MSDN subscription. There you also have a free Azure environment, which also has 750 hours of a small compute instance, which is a dedicated processor for your virtual machine. And you have some other numbers for SQL Azure and for data transfer. And you can start this from within your MSDN account. So have a look at your MSDN account. There will be a button, Windows Azure Platform. And then after a few clicks, then you will get your credentials to go to the management portal. And then you can create your services. Then you can create your database. And you can start working. Okay. Next step is have a look at the promotional offers. These are offers that are making a combination of different parameters. Like, for instance, the Windows Azure Core has hosted service, service bus, access control, and data transfer for about 42 euros a month. The other one is SQL Azure. It's only a SQL database of 10 gigabytes, or you can decide to create 10 databases of 1 gigabyte. It's up to you. And this costs you about 53 euros. And then you have the combination, Windows Azure and SQL Azure Extended. There you have Azure as a hosting environment in combination with the data in SQL Azure, which costs you about 78 euros a month. These are commitment offers. So you have to commit for 6 months to do that. After that, you can restart your commitment, or you can go to a pure consumption model where the prices are a little bit higher. But then you don't have any commitment, and that's the difference. And you don't have to commit to pay. If you do just go to the consumption model, and there is a month that you do not use anything, you do not use your SQL database, and you do not use your hosting environment, then you will not pay. Okay. So more in detail about pricing, just a number of basic concepts. Azure is a service. You pay it as a service. There are no licenses. You will pay for use. And we're running in what we call an operational expenses model. Your expenses will be coupled to what you use. It's operational. And you get a monthly bill. So what you pay for is different types of parameters. And in the end of the month, you will see a bill that describes for every parameter what it has consumed and what it will cost you. So you pay for the services, Windows Azure, SQL Azure, Azure App Fabric, but you only pay for what you use. If you have a Windows Azure environment which has only an application but no database, you don't pay for SQL Azure, you don't pay for the App Fabric. Or you can create another situation where you say, well, I don't have an application in the cloud because my application is still developed and deployed on my desktops, but my database is in the cloud. So this is another model. Let's say that you have some older VB6 applications that cannot be migrated to a web environment because they are desktop-based. Well, then you can say, well, I'm still going to deploy that application to my customers, but my customer does not have to take care of the SQL database. We will use the SQL database in the cloud. So this is also a possibility. Only use the SQL database in the cloud and still have your current applications running on-premises, running on the desktop of your end users. So you can make all sorts of combinations that you want. But basically, you have three big services, Azure as a hosting environment, SQL Azure as a database storage, and App Fabric to allow communication between two applications. In many situations, you will not need this. In a typical setup, you will need Windows Azure and a SQL database, but the App Fabric, you will not need it if you don't have any integration between two applications. If you only have an application that is using a database, there is no App Fabric.
Does that require
If you use Azure Q, then you're inside Windows Azure and not inside App Fabric. But then on the other hand, in the future, App Fabric will also have its own technology to create queuing mechanisms. And then you're back in the App Fabric.
Communication between like a web front end and a worker role.
This is part of Windows Azure. Yeah? But then again, we have to go in more detail because within Windows Azure, you have three pricing parameters. One for compute, one for storage, and one for storage transactions. Compute means running an application and you pay for every hour that a CPU, a processor, is running. So if you have a virtual machine with one processor and that processor is running for 24 hours a day, well, you pay for 24 hours a day. And at the end of the month, you get a total of 30 or 31 multiplied by the number of hours that you have run it that day. Okay? Second parameter in Windows Azure is storage. Storage is there if you want to store non-relational data. So you don't have to need storage if you're running SQL Azure, because SQL Azure is the relational database. Storage is only the flat files, blobs, images, streaming media, and also the queues that you're talking about. If you want to have communication between web and work role in an asynchronously architecture, then you will use queuing. To use queuing, if you put some data in a queue and you read it, then you will also pay for the storage for that queue. Yeah. But like I said, in many situations, you only need compute, but no storage and storage transactions. Storage transactions are the number of read and write operations to the storage. So storage itself, number two, is expressed in number of gigabytes that you have stored during a month. Storage transactions is specified in the number of read and write operations to that storage. So for every time you read something out of the storage or you write something into the storage, like for instance pulling a queue, costs you a storage transaction. Okay. More. Transaction is every time you read something from the storage. It's not a number of bytes, no. It depends. It depends where are you, from which location are you going to the table storage. If you're going from outside the data center, you also pay for the data transfer. So then you have three parameters. Storing X amount of gigabytes for a month costs you so much. For every read and write operation, you have a storage transaction, which costs you also some amount. And if you want to download that data to a place outside the data center, you pay for the data transfer. Okay. SQL Azure has no more detail. There is one price per month per gigabyte. There are no transaction costs. So if you're using your SQL database with one query a day or a million queries a day, it costs you exactly the same amount. You only pay for the storage on a monthly basis. And Azure App Fabric has two parameters, the number of access control transactions. So every time if you use access control service and somebody logs in with his live ID and you map the claims to something that your application can understand to do the authentication, you have an access control transaction. And if you have multiple applications that are using the service bus to have communication to each other, you're paying for each connection. If one application wants to move data to another application, and you use the service bus to allow that communication, then you have two connections. If you have a third application that also is interested in that data, you have three connections and so on. So these are the basic prices, and then you also have the data transfer. So independent of whether you use Azure SQL, Azure or App Fabric, at the moment you store data, you transfer data from outside the data center to the data center, or the other way around, there is also pricing involved with that. Okay. So let's go to this slide here. Well, you think now you have eight different parameters, but like I said, your application does not always consume all of them. Especially when we're talking about storage and about App Fabric, Access Control, and Service Bus, in many situations you don't need them. So in a typical application where we have an application and a database, you only have four parameters, the compute hours, the number of hours that you're running a processor, the SQL database, depending on the size of the database, you're also paying for that, and the data transfer in the data center and the data transfer coming out of the data center. Those are the most typical four parameters that you have to know. Let's have a look at the rates. So for all the different parameters, I've just listed all the prices in US dollars. This is the same but in euros. For a compute hour, you pay $12. For storage, you pay $15 per gigabyte per month. For transactions, meaning you read or write something from the storage, you pay $1 for 10,000 of those read and write operations. So for a transaction, for 10,000 transactions, you pay $1. For SQL Azure, you pay about $10 for a gigabyte per month to store data into that SQL database. And then you have the more detailed parameters like service bus connection. One connection costs you $4, but you can buy a package. If you buy a package of five connections, then it will only cost you $2 for that connection. And then the data transfer per gigabyte in and per gigabyte out, you have a different pricing for the data you transfer from the data center and outside the data center. Okay. This is a screenshot of the monthly bill you get. And you will get a very detailed bill, which shows you, like, for instance, on this day I have done a data transfer out of the data center from North America, this amount, and it will cost me so much money, and this will... And you have complete control over that bill. At the end of the month, you will see that bill. You can even see that bill during the month, and the usage can be seen even if the month is not over. And you can have a look at that portal and see what you will need to pay at the end of the month. And then you can do some calculations. I created some Excel spreadsheet that tries to calculate what it will cost you at the end of the month. And so I will open this and show you a little example of that. So this is an example. It's called 50 customers, but that's not really important. So first you decide on the compute hours. Let's say I have, in this situation, two applications that are running. And one application is running in production, and it's running for 1,118 hours for a month. And my staging environment, and my testing environment, is also running, but it only runs for 70 hours in a month. And total is... Oh, there's something wrong here. Should count up, but I don't know. Doesn't matter. So this is the number of hours per month, and then we multiply this with the amount of money for a compute hour. Oh, yes, yes. 8 and 1, just not visible here. Okay. And then you have the storage, and you put the number of storage gigabytes that you want to have stored inside that spreadsheet. You try to estimate the number of transactions a day. You try to estimate the gigabytes of money of data you transfer in and out of the data center. Then you decide on your database. And maybe if you use the App Fabric, you decide on the number of access control and the number of service bus connections. And for this setup here, this costs you about €600 a month. If you look at what is the biggest part of that price is, it will always be compute and SQL Azure. All the other prices are very low. The storage, the transactions, the data transfer, access control transactions, the service bus connections are very low compared to the two major parts of the pricing, which is always the compute, the number of CPU hours that you're running, and your SQL Azure database. Those are the two main parts of your monthly bill. So just if you were wondering, how did I get to this number of hours? 1,180 hours to run an application during a month. Well, I have created a breakdown for that. And because we're working in a scalable system, and we can add instances if we want, I decided that, well, in my application, on Monday between midnight and 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock, I'm running in a low usage environment. I only need one instance. And at the moment it is 6 o'clock, between 8 o'clock, I will have some peak in my usage. So here you see, well, I'm running now 4 instances. For that hour, I need to run 4 instances. And after the peak is over, after 8 o'clock, I will see a normal usage, and I need to use 2 instances until it is 8 o'clock in the evening, and then during the night, I'm going back to 1 instance. Next day, the same pattern here, but I see a difference if it is Sunday and Saturday. On Saturday and Sunday, I do not scale out. I just want to work with 1 instance because I don't expect a peak during Saturday and Saturday. Okay? So this is the calculation that you have to make. Well, when I'm expecting peaks during the week, maybe on this day I will have a higher peak than during weekend hours and so on. So this means you can run 1 instance during low and multiple instances when you have a high peak. So then you calculate, well, this will cost me about 258 hours per week multiplied by the weeks and a month, and this is 1,118 hours. And for my staging, I have another breakdown. I'm only using my staging 1 week in a month, and I'm doing this during working hours between 6 o'clock and 8 o'clock in the evening, and I will never go to multiple instances. It's either 0 or either 1 instance for my staging environment. And I can bring down my staging environment and only activate it when I need it. Yeah? So, okay, this may be a rather complicated example, but just to give you the message, you can decide on the number of instances that you want to use based on your load that you're going to expect. Okay. So the idea is try to estimate these peak loads during the week and then try to estimate what the number of hours that will be used during a week and during a month, and then you have the complete price. And then the other big part of the price is your SQL Azure data storage. Here I specify 50 gigabytes a month, which is a lot. You have 50 gigabytes, well, it costs you about 350 euros per month for 50 gigabytes of SQL Azure database storage. So this was the introduction about pricing. So let's go continue with how to build for Azure, but we have seen this in previous sessions. If you want to build for Azure, we have this known platform, ESP.NET Visual Studio SQL Server. We can start developing locally. There is a free SDK. So like Martin showed you, there is some kind of Azure simulator running on your development machine. You have a very good integration with Visual Studio. There is a database schema migration wizard. So if you have your SQL already deployed locally, you can just migrate it to the cloud with some wizard. There are some free training kits. And then we have the offering, one offering for deploying and testing, which is a free offering. And then we have some productions offerings. Little word about a project structure. If you start working with an Azure project, you have 2 levels. And one level is the Azure subscription, and the other level is the Azure project. The Azure subscription is the unit of billing, and you will get a monthly invoice for every subscription that you have created. It's coupled to one Windows Live ID. It is also coupled to one credit card. For one subscription based on one credit card, you can have 20 CPUs running at the same time. If you want to have more than 20 instances or 20 processors running at the same time, either you will create multiple subscriptions or you will call support. There is a support, and you can issue a support ticket to have it added that you can have multiple, more than 20 instances running at the same time. But normally, based on a credit card, the maximum is 20 CPUs. You also have, for one subscription, you have one SQL Azure server. But within that server, you can contain multiple databases. So you can create up to, theoretically, 150 databases inside that SQL server. Yeah. So then at the level of the project, level of project is the unit of administration. So if you have an Azure project, well, there is another person that has access to that Azure project portal. It's also a Windows Live ID, and he can do the administration of your services. This could be the same. The Windows Live ID that is used for the billing portal can be the same as the Windows Live ID account for the Azure project, but can also be different. As you can say, well, the big boss will have the subscription, and my lead developer will be the administrator of my my environment. Yeah. Within that project, you can create management certificates. Management certificates are there to allow developers to manage your services, to deploy new services without need to have the Windows Live ID account of the administration portal. So this means you can do an automated deployment without the need to log in into the environment. And maybe your Team Foundation server, after he has done the build, he can start to deploy automatically the new version to your staging environment without any human interaction. So then you can use a management certificate that you create on-site on that TFS environment, and it will do the deployment automatically. Okay, within one Azure project, like I said, you can have multiple hosted services. And a hosted service is a unit of deployment. In a service, you can create a web role and maybe a worker role, or maybe a combination of multiple web roles and multiple worker roles. Every role is at least one virtual machine, and you can decide whether to put them in production or staging. So for in an Azure project, for every service that you create, you can deploy from within Visual Studio or Team Foundation servers your binaries to that host service, but you can decide whether to go in production or to in staging. And production means this is the environment that my end users are using, and staging is my testing environment. And so my new version can be first deployed to staging, and after the tests are finished, then we can switch them. We can switch from staging to production very easily. This is also done by going to the management portal, pressing a button, and it will switch staging to production and the other way around. Can also be done automated. So within one Azure project, you have multiple hosted services. You also have a storage account, or maybe multiple storage accounts. You can create as much storage accounts that you want. And those can store your non-relational data, blob files, images, streaming media. And within the storage account, you can make the blobs or the files that you store on a storage account either public or private. You can decide, well, my storage can only be accessed from within my Azure application because it has some credentials. It has username and password to have access to that storage. Or maybe the other way around, I want to store public data, like images that I want to expose on my website. We don't need any username and password to see the data. And that's a decision you make also at the application level. And then within an Azure project, like I said, you have one SQL Azure server, and then you can create multiple databases. And you can decide yourself on the size of the database. You can say, well, I want one database of 1 gigabyte, and then a few other databases of 10 gigabytes, and maybe another database within the same SQL Azure server of 50 gigabytes. Yeah. You can also grow and shrink your databases. So if you have created a database of 1 gigabyte, and it's running full, and you see, well, there is no room left anymore in that database, you can enlarge it to a larger size. And this is done very easy. It's a transact SQL statement to do that. Okay, so that was an overview of a project structure. So now let's have more look at deployment models, because your deployment models can influence your business model. And the way you deploy something also will influence the way that you make money, the way that you pay for it. So very basic setup. We have users using an application, and the application is using a data storage. Okay. So in one model, the all-cloud model, we can say, well, we're going to put them both in Azure. My application is running on Azure Compute. It's an application running inside a virtual machine. And my data storage is a SQL Azure database also in Azure. And we have communication between the two, of course. So it's considered as one deployment. So then about the pricing model, in this simple approach, we say, well, the ISV, you as a customer, will pay for both of them. You will pay the complete deployment. You pay for the application, number of hours per month. you pay for the data storage, number of gigabytes in a database per month, and so on. And you also pay for the data transfer. So the end users that are going to your application, this is a web application, well, the data transfer that is going out of the data center and in the data center, you also pay for that. You will not pay for this transfer. Between the application and your data storage, if you decide that you place your application and your data storage, your SQL database, in the same data center, and that you can do that if you deploy it, you can decide, well, I want to host it in Northern Europe, and if my data storage is also in Northern Europe, I don't pay for any data transfer between application and my data storage. I only pay for data transfer that goes out of the data center and comes from outside the data center inside the data center. Okay? So in this setup, we say, well, you as an ISV, you have an Azure project, and you pay for it, and you pay for both applications and the data storage and the data transfer. So what do you pay? You pay operational expenses. One CPU is about 63 euros a month. My data transfer for 100 gigabytes is about 7 euros. But then if you want to align your business model, you have to do some bookkeeping based on the logins to know the statistics of your usage. And because you are paying at Microsoft the monthly bill, but you want to see how much you need to invoice to your customers. And because your customers are expecting from you that you're also working in a software as a service model. So they don't pay any prepaid license, they also want to pay on a monthly basis. So how do you align those two? And that's the basic idea of this presentation. Well, for the application, it's not very easy. You have to do your bookkeeping yourself. And you have to, for every login, you have to remember that somebody has logged in on a certain date, and then you have some statistics on usage. Another way to do that could be that you're writing custom HTTP handlers to see the transfer volume. So instead of just hosting your streaming media on a public environment, you will host your public streaming media on a closed HTTP handler inside your application. And every time somebody wants to see that streaming media, he must go through that HTTP handler. And that HTTP handler will just remember how many volume that has been transferred for which user. And so you're working in a kind of authenticated model. Instead of having a public data, you will have it not public because you have to go through that handler, and that handler knows who the customer is, knows how many transfer that the customer has asked for of that storage, and then you record that in your own database, and you do your bookkeeping on top of that. Another solution would be, if you don't want to spend time in creating that bookkeeping logic, you can work with prefixes and domain names. Like, for instance, my application is hosted on myapp.be, and I'm going to give each customer its own prefix. So customer1.myapplication.be, customer2.myapplication.be. And it can point to exactly the same application. I only have one application running inside my virtual machine. But on the IIS level, I just configured multiple host headers. But every host header goes to the same application on the same virtual machine. And if I have multiple virtual machines, the load balancer will distribute the load across multiple machines. But because I've created those custom domain names here, customer 1 and customer 2, I can detect in my IIS log files who is causing the more traffic than somebody else. And we're working with the same application. I don't make any difference inside my application. But because I've told customer 1 he has to use this one URL and another customer has to use this URL, I can make the difference inside my log files. Because the log files, they record that it is coming from customer 1 or customer 2 on that URL. And then I can make the difference. So either you keep your bookkeeping yourself at the application level, or you just move that bookkeeping to the IIS log files based on DNS names that you give to each customer. Okay? So that was for the application. What about the database? For the database, you pay between 7 euros and 355 euros a month, depending on the size of the database. Like I said, data transfer between the application and the database is free within the same data center. Well, then we have two options. Either we create a multi-tenant database, which is one big database that contains the data for every customer. But then you will see it's not very easy to see the difference between all the customers. What I could do is create multiple single-tenant databases. So for every customer that I have, I create a different database. Customer 1 goes to database 1, customer 2 goes to database 2, and so on. So then I will see at my invoice, my monthly bill, the traffic that is based on that database. So I can create a 1 gigabyte database for this customer, and maybe I have a bigger customer that has multiple users, has more users than the first customer. I can create a larger database. And I will see the difference in price on the monthly bill for each database. So if you want to see that, maybe it's better to go to multiple single-tenant databases, because then you have an overview of the consumption for every customer in the billing portal. All right? If we have a deeper look at SQL Azure, but only for SQL Azure, we can also have more information on the bandwidth and the database usage. So again, we want to align costs and income based on different customers. There is a view inside SQL Azure that is named sys.bandwidth users, and this will return the bandwidth users for each database. So for each database inside your SQL server, there is a record inside the bandwidth users table. And this table is updated every hour. Every hour you will see a new record in that, or maybe every day, I'm not sure. Every day you will see a new record in that database. So every day you can see what is the usage for that database. So if you have multiple single-tenant databases, you can really make the difference between customer 1 and customer 2 because they have different databases. And inside that view, the bandwidth usage, I can see for every database one record for every day of the consumption for that day. Yes? Only to the size.
So if you can have 100 databases, not that, in total or not more than 1 gigabyte, it's still 7 euros.
If you have 10 databases of 1 gigabyte, will be the same amount of money of one database of 10 gigabytes.
The minimum size
is 1 gigabyte. Okay. So you will pay 7 euros for every database at least. At the moment you go, and you can say, well, I have 100 databases. No bigger than 1 gigabyte. So you will pay 100 times 7 euros. But then you can have one customer that needs to store more data, and maybe for one of that customer, instead of having 1 gigabyte of storage, you need to go to 5 gigabytes. So the next increment is 5 gigabytes. So for only that one customer, you will pay 5 times 7 euros, and for the other 99 customers, you will still pay only 1 times 7 euros. So every database can start growing and shrinking, and so on. So to see the consumption, you have two views. One is the bandwidth usage, and one is the database usage. Database usage shows you the type, and the type is related to the size, 1 or 5 or 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 gigabytes of storage, and the duration of the database, because we're billing you not on a monthly basis, but on a daily basis. If you start having a database on the 15th of a month, at the end of the month, you will only pay for that 15 days that you have used. So every day there is a calculation. Like say, day one I have a database of 1 gigabyte, and the next day I'm going beyond 1 gigabyte, and on day number 3 I'm going again below 1 gigabyte. You will see a difference in price, because for the first day you will pay for 1 gigabyte, the second day you will pay for the next increment being 5 gigabyte, and then the next day again you're down to 1 gigabyte. So it's a very dynamic system, and you can monitor that inside those views. So in the database users view, you will see one record for every day for every database. Okay, those two views you see, one of the bandwidth usage and one of the database usage concerning the size, it's only there for SQL Azure. In the bandwidth usage, you will not see the usage coming from out of the data center to your application. You will only see the usage from an application to the database. But then again, bandwidth usage between the application and SQL is free if you're running it within the same data center. But my idea is that the bandwidth usage is also a good indicator of the total consumption in your application. So if you do not want to do the bookkeeping yourself based on logins of HTTP handlers of IIS log files, you can consider a situation like this. I have three customers, one multi-tenant application running on one domain name without IIS log files, without HTTP handlers, but we have multiple single-tenant databases. Well, we can monitor that. Well, for this database, which is related to customer one, only customer one will use database one, I have this bandwidth between my application and my database. For another database, I see a lot less bandwidth. And database, well, it's a copy-paste error. It should be database 2 and database 3. It's related to customer 2. And then we have a very high consumer, which has a high database and also a high consumption in bandwidth. Well, if I see this pattern, and I have a one-to-one relationship between my customers and my database, it will also be related to this data transfer. So the SQL bandwidth can be related to the application usage. If we see more SQL bandwidth going from the application to a certain database, this will also mean that we have more traffic on the application from the outside also. And also for little consuming customers, we will have the same pattern. If they have less consumption of my application, I will also see less consumption in my database and the other way around. So they are kind of related to each other. Yeah? So this traffic can be monitored by custom HTTP handlers, by log files, by custom domain names. But if you do not want to do that, you can also rely on the fact that this is monitored for you, the usage between application and database. This is monitored inside the views. And in normal conditions, if you have a one-to-one relationship between the customer and a database, which means I have multiple single-tenant databases, I can also calculate what this transfer will be. And so if I know the total number of gigabytes that I transfer from this to this, well, I use the same ratio that I see here. I can make a kind of report of the ratio between application and database. Could be also applied to my customer having access to my application. Yeah. So this is a way to try to estimate who are my biggest customers, who are my smaller customers. Because they want to have also a service as software as a service model. Well, this could be a way to try to calculate that. Yeah. All right. If you have questions about that, feel free to ask. I know I'm going rather quickly, but please interrupt me if you have questions. Yes, go ahead. What do you mean by customer? You as a customer for Microsoft or your customers?
So my customer, that's an end user. Mm-hmm. The customer number 2, for an example up here,
yeah,
runs an application, but it doesn't do any activity as such. Mm-hmm. It keeps the application open and idle for a while.
You just mean he keeps the browser open?
That's right.
Okay, then there is no data transfer.
Yeah, but will it be calculated on the computing level?
Your application here we have one virtual machine, or maybe we have two instances of the same virtual machine. If no customers are using the application, you will still pay for the compute hour. So during the night, for instance, or during the weekend, if nobody is using your application, you will still pay for the virtual machine. But then you can decide to undeploy the virtual machine. If you see, well, during the weekend, it's not useful that my application is up and running, you can bring it down and it will save you money. Yeah? But if you run your application and nobody is using it, okay, yeah, then you don't pay for the data transfer because nobody is using it. You will also see no traffic here, but that's no problem because you don't pay it anyway. But you will keep on paying for the number of hours that your application is running. And so this is my application that I want to expose to customers. If no customers are going to my application, I still need to pay. But I can just undeploy it to save money. But then again, you have to see, like in the spreadsheet, maybe at 6 o'clock in the morning I want to have 4 instances, and during the night I only want to have 1 instance. So I can make a scale-out system based on a timing schedule, also to make a very profitable business environment, business model.
Mm-hmm. And somehow four or five instances are being opened by the customer. Will there be any kind of instances, will there be any kind of indication provided to the developer or to the company?
Yeah, but you cannot relate instances to your customers. You have to decide how many instances that you run. It's not your end customer. If he starts a new application, if he starts a browser and goes to your application, he's going to be directed to one of the instances that you already are running. A customer cannot start an Azure instance. You, as an ISV, you deploy your application inside a virtual machine instance. Yeah? You decide on how many instances that you want. And at the moment you decide, I'm running them, you will pay for them. But then if your customers start using your application, they're using your application that is already running. So they don't trigger the application to be started. And your application, it's a web application. It is running always. And at the moment the customer starts his browser and goes to your application, to your website URL, then he goes inside the application, but the application is already running. It's a web application. So if you want to see the performance of my application, if you want to scale out, because I see that customers are just executing a high load on my machines, then I have to configure performance metrics. As a developer or as an administrator with System Center Operation Manager, I can define performance metrics. And those performance metrics, like for instance, every 5 minutes I want to know the CPU utilizations of all my virtual machines, and I will download those metrics. And then every hour, I will try to make a calculation based on that metrics to see if I need to scale out to another instance. If I see that for the last hour, I see an average of CPU utilization above 90%, then it is time to add a new instance. But that decision has to be done somewhere. It's not done by the framework. It's not done by Azure. You as a developer or as a System Center Operation Manager, administrator, you should define that triggering logic. And you have to decide, well, for this metric, if it goes beyond this threshold, I want to install a new virtual machine. So your customers are not triggering an addition of virtual machines. You as an administrator will look to performance metrics and then start another virtual machine. Yes. So let's have a look at the time. I see some signal that we're almost closing. Just one more message or two more small messages that I want to give is about deployment. There is also an architecture that you can use where you will say, well, I'm going to deploy Azure as an application and also store my data in the cloud on an Azure platform, but I will only pay for my application. You pay Microsoft for running the CPU hours, but your end user, your customer, needs to go to Microsoft to start also an Azure subscription, and he needs to pay for the data storage. So this is the situation. You are paying for the compute hours, but you don't pay for the Azure storage, but your customer will pay for the Azure storage, but not for the compute hours. So this is a situation where I say, well, the customer owns his data. He decides where to store his data. If he wants to store it on Azure, okay. He needs to pay for that himself. You pay for running the application. Your customer pays for the data storage. And then we have another model, which is a hybrid model, where we say, well, I'm running my application on Azure, but my database is on-premise. So then the end user will not pay to Microsoft, but he pays for his own infrastructure. So then we're using Azure Virtual Network, also known as Azure Connect, where we build a secure tunnel between your web application in the cloud with a secure tunnel to your customer's SQL Server. So the customer still owns his data. It's inside his own data center, but your application in the cloud is using that SQL Server. So we only use Azure for the application, and we use an on-premises infrastructure at the customer side for data storage, and we build some secure tunnel between the two. So the customer doesn't pay to Microsoft, he only pays for his own infrastructure. You as an ISV pay for Microsoft only for the compute hours for the application, but not for the data storage. And then we have another model, also a hybrid model, the other way around. We run the application on premises, but we host our data in the cloud. Again, if we both host them on premises, we don't have a story. Then you don't go to the cloud. At least we have to have one component somewhere in the cloud. So in this situation, we have on-premises applications, and this could be your desktop, FAT client, VB6, other technology applications that are using a connection to your SQL database. But instead of having that SQL database also installed on the customer side, we're going to have that SQL database in Azure. So the application runs on the desktop of the end user, but the data is in the cloud. This is also possible. And then you can again make the decision, well, you as an ISV pay to Microsoft for the data storage, or maybe only your customer, the end user, will pay Microsoft for the data storage. So again, you have different models here. We can also describe this as storage as a service. You're only using Azure for storage, and your application is still running on premises. Okay, demo calculation, we have seen Excel. So that was it. Almost running out of time. I think I'm behind time. Some questions and answers. Questions coming from you. I will try to provide answers, of course.
There was also this subscription model. Is that something that's supported by Microsoft also technology? Or, I mean, when an end user goes to the marketplace and buys a service, mm-hmm. How does that work in pricing?
If you're talking about marketplace, well, you have two types. Either you sell data, and then you have a monthly revenue that is 80% for you and 20% for Microsoft. And if you place an application on data market, on the application market, you also decide on your own pricing model. But then again, you have to pay for hosting that application also.
But the market intervenes in managing your customers and...
Yes. Yes.
Okay, there's no direct link.
No. For managing the customers and for billing the customers, Microsoft takes 20% of what you are earning from the customers. That's the basic business model here. If that application is running on SQL Azure or maybe on Azure Compute, you still need to pay for that to Microsoft. Also, if you just want to expose data to end users, and you do that by only having a SQL Azure database, okay, you need to pay for that SQL Azure database. But for every item of data that you sell to your customer, you get 80% and Microsoft takes 20%. So there are different models. Yes?
What happens with support? Let's say I have an application running on one instance and the VM fails.
Mm-hmm.
What happens then? Does Azure immediately take over in some way? Or?
Yes, there is a service level agreement that says, well, if you're running at least two instances, that we will almost never go down, which means you have a service level agreement of 90.99 point and then some nines. I don't know exactly what the number is, but this is only true if you run two instances. If you decide yourself, I'm going to have two instances, which means at least 48 hours a day, one application, one... And then I have distributed across two virtual machines. So it means I have to pay twice. For every compute hour, I have to pay twice. Then there is a very high service level agreement. We also have a service level agreement on SQL Azure. For every database, for every item of data that you store in a database, there is also a service level agreement that you return this data in this amount of time. And it will never go down, or almost never go down. If we go down, if we have violated our service level agreement, you will get a refund. You will simply get money back on the next month. So this for us is because we need to pay you back if we fail. For us, this is a very high pressure to keep everything running. And within SQL Azure, like Nick already told, we keep the data on three physical machines. Also for table storage, for queue storage, for blob storage, we're having this on three multiple machines. If you run two instances of your virtual machine, we will have those instances placed on different machines, on different racks, on different power supplies, so that the chance that they both go down at the same time is very, very small. So small that it is within the service level agreement. If we still have a problem, then we pay you back. But you have to decide on having two instances running at the same time.
Okay. But then the safest way would be to have one instance in one data center and another in another?
If you're thinking about a terroristic attack that is flying a plane to some data center, maybe.
So not in case of a power failure?
No. So within the data center, we have multiple power supplies, multiple racks, multiple switches. And because we need to attain that service level agreement, we will just distribute your applications so far away from each other that they will never go down at the same time. That's something you don't have to take care of. You have that service level agreement for us. You pay for that service level agreement, and we try to achieve that. Also for the data storage.